Drive Time on RTÉ Radio 1, sponsored by Zurich. Protect your family's future with life cover from Zurich. Talk to a financial broker to find out more.
Returning to the UK next, where Chancellor Jeremy Hunt yesterday unveiled his spring budget. Mr Hunt said the government would add £11 billion to its defence budget over the next 5 years due to heightened tensions globally and the demands of supporting Ukraine. Writing in today's Irish Times, UK Ambassador to Ireland Paul Johnston sets out the new world we inhabit, which he describes as more dangerous with far-reaching consequences for British people and for those of our friends and partners like Ireland. Well, Ambassador Johnston joins us now, and good evening, Ambassador. Thank you for joining us on the programme this afternoon. You say today in your piece in the Irish Times, you say the world is changing and we need to change too. Can you talk to us about the threats that worry you most?
Certainly. It's worth saying that what we published this week was an updated review of our international security posture. We'd done one in 2021. In fact, I'd been involved in one way back in 2010. What we've seen in the last 2 years is a picture darkening, not least in Europe, with the Russian invasion of Ukraine and everything that flows from that, but also in the Indo-Pacific region. And so what we've looked at in our so-called integrated review refresh is the need for action in four main areas: strengthening the international order, looking at more effective deterrence against threats, addressing vulnerabilities through resilience, which is quite a broad-based term embracing economic security, energy security, cyber security, health security, and also looking at how we can develop our own national strengths in areas like science and technology, innovation, soft power and information. So it's a broad-based look at what is a very complex but I think increasingly worrying set of threats and challenges.
And I wonder then, where do you think Ireland comes into that? Because if we look at what UK military spending is at, it's already at around 2% of GDP. Your Prime Minister yesterday saying it's now going to rise to 2.5% in the longer term. As I'm sure you're aware, a big debate about military spending here in Ireland, at the moment we're spending less than 0.3% of GDP on defence. That's going to increase to 0.5% by 2028 under new plans. But a lot of people say it should go higher, it must go higher. Ireland is very vulnerable, a lot of people say. Do you think Ireland is the weakest link in European security?
I think every nation needs to take its own decisions on defence spending. What I think is relevant to the British-Irish relationship is, if you like, a broader definition of security and this idea of broader resilience, embracing things like energy security and cyber security. And at the last meeting of the British Irish Intergovernmental Conference back in January in Dublin, the two governments agreed to work together on areas like cyber and energy. So I think there's obviously a defence aspect to every country's security posture. And as you say, we're making some serious extra investments. Every country will want to make its own decision based on its own calculus. And we've published quite a detailed assessment in the hope that it will be useful to others. But there's also that broader security picture, looking at resilience in quite a sort of quite a wide sense, and I think there are areas there where we'd certainly be keen to discuss and work with Ireland and with a range of other countries.
So you're talking really specifically then about energy and cyber as opposed to other aspects of defence. When you talk about cooperation with Ireland,
those are areas we've identified. You referenced yourself the increased investment that Ireland is putting into defence. There's obviously the Commission for Defence report work going on now in the Defence Forces and the Department of Defence on an implementation plan. I think we'd be very ready to discuss with Ireland what we could do together. There's obvious shared interests like UN peacekeeping, but a range of other things as well. So I think we stand ready for that discussion.
You also say in your piece today that we want to continue to strengthen our diplomatic and security relationships across Europe. And you make the point that being out of the EU doesn't mean that you're out of Europe and you want to work within Europe still. Yet you do. One could wonder, how does that aspiration fit both with Brexit and also with very recent threats by the UK government to breach international law?
So I think this is something that is a bit new, probably, or more is given more priority than it was in the 2021 review, partly because of the shock to European security from Russia's invasion of Ukraine, but also I think a realisation on our part that we need to be clearer, perhaps, than we have been about the fact that Europe and the broader Euro-Atlantic area is our overriding security priority, and that we have a strong interest in ensuring that Europe is stable, secure, and able to prosper. And I think perhaps we haven't been as clear about that as we might have been. We've obviously got big interests as a key member of NATO in the Security Council through the G7, where we've done a lot of work together with European countries on Russia sanctions. But we've also said in our new policy document that we welcome the positive evolution of our post-Brexit relationship with the EU. The recent agreement on the Windsor Framework is clearly an important part of that. We saw the UK-French summit last week with a strong security focus. So I think there is this emphasis now, as well as obviously on the NATO dimension, which is paramount, but also to working with European partners and with the EU and this new European political community, where the UK will be hosting its summit meeting in 2024. So I think a reinvestment in sort of European cooperation is part of this.
And is the new Prime Minister driving that, do you think? Is there a new push towards more cooperation with Europe and the EU under Rishi Sunak than there was under Boris Johnson?
I think there's a realisation that if you look at the big global challenges, Russia, China, climate, energy, there is a lot of things that we can do together with the European Union. We clearly have in the Trade and Cooperation Agreement a platform that we can develop. I think we'd want to be very sort of pragmatic, but also quite proactive about how we do it. It's worth remembering that Liz Truss went to the first meeting of the European political community. But I think the Prime Minister and the Foreign Secretary and other ministers all recognise that in this, as we put it in the review document, this more volatile world, we need to be working closely with a range of partners, and obviously our closest partners are our neighbours.
Because actually you mentioned the Windsor Framework, and I want to ask you about that and the DUP in just a second, but just on the broader aspect of the Windsor Framework when it was announced, I was really struck by the number of senior British politicians speaking to UK media, talking about what a great deal it was for Northern Ireland, that Northern Ireland would now have access to both the EU market and the UK market, sort of the way the UK did before Brexit. And there didn't seem to be any irony, you know, in British politicians trying to sell this as a great deal for Northern Ireland, despite having convinced voters to give up exactly that situation for themselves. Did you see that irony?
Well, I'm not going to sort of comment on domestic British politics, but I think we'd always recognise that there's some very special circumstances about Northern Ireland, not least sharing, obviously, a land border with an EU member state, the imperative of avoiding any sense of a return to a hard border. And therefore, you know, what the protocol was originally designed to achieve and what we think the Windsor Framework now sustainably delivers is that very important balance for Northern Ireland of full access to the UK internal market, but also a great access, a unique access for a non-member state or part of non-member state to the EU single market.
Okay, so MPs are going to vote on the Windsor Framework next week. Now, the DUP have said the current deal is insufficient and that they need more detail. Will they get that extra detail by Wednesday, do you think, when their MP will be asked to vote on it?
Well, I think the government will set out its plans ahead of Wednesday. I don't know the exact detail of that, but I think we've set out in some detail the Windsor Framework itself and the provisions that flow from that. We think it's a very important development, clearly. I think it was a big negotiating success for both sides. And I think we've acknowledged the flexibility and the pragmatism that's been shown by the European Commission. We understand that the DUP are taking time to look at it, but the government's clear that this would deliver real benefits for Northern Ireland. And clearly we'll be hopeful that MPs will recognise that on Wednesday.
Last night in Washington, D.C., ahead of St. Patrick's weekend, the U.S. Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer said, and I'll quote, "As Majority Leader of the United States Senate, which decides on treaties, I will not support any trade deal between the U.S. and the U.K. if any settlement undermines the Good Friday Agreement." It's not the first time we've seen that sort of intervention from the U.S. What view does your government take of interventions like that?
I think right from the start, our approach to the protocol, and it's absolutely our approach to the Windsor Framework, has been that the whole purpose of this is to respect the balances and the integrity of the Good Friday Agreement. And it was the concern about the imbalance, if you like, between the North-South and the East-West dimension, the problems of the connectivity between Great Britain and Northern Ireland, that we wanted to address in looking at the operation of the protocol, and that we have addressed through the Windsor Framework. So I'm not going to comment on another country's political statement, except to say that we absolutely share the American administration's and the Irish government's and the EU government's commitment to upholding and respecting the Good Friday Agreement. We want the institutions of the Good Friday Agreement up and running. We don't think they should ever have been suspended, but we certainly think the Windsor framework should provide a basis for returning to power sharing. We hope that will happen as soon as possible.
Ambassador, finally, there's a big rugby fixture this Saturday between Ireland and
Is
England.
There?
You might not have noticed. I know you're a Scotland fan. Who are you backing on Saturday?
Oh, that's the hardest question of all. I'm obviously, you know, ambassador of the United Kingdom, so you can argue there's an England interest and a Northern Ireland interest. I thoroughly enjoyed watching Ireland beat France at the Aviva Stadium. I somewhat less enjoyed watching Ireland beat Scotland on the telly on Sunday afternoon. Could I say in a very sort of cliched way, I hope rugby is the winner? Could I also say that I think it would be fantastic to be in Dublin with Ireland winning its first Grand Slam on home territory. But equally, I wish, as a good diplomat, should I wish both sides the very best. And very
diplomatic
to you for St. Patrick's Day as well.
Thank you very much. And thank you for joining us this evening. That's UK Ambassador to Ireland, Paul Johnston. We'll take a break.